This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. It's great to be back at the Toastmasters podcast with my buddy Ryan. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing great, Bo, and yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. What do we have today?
Well, today we have an interesting interview. We're going to be talking about overcoming life's buffaloes with Vincent Kituku. And this is based on the article, the member profile of him in the December issue of the Toastmaster magazine. So at this point, I would like to welcome Dr. Kituku to the Toastmasters podcast. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. It's wonderful to talk with both of you, gentlemen.
Great to have you thank with you. Us today, Vincent. So I'd like to start off. Normally, we read a little bit longer bio of our guest on the show, but I thought I'd start off asking you if you could give us a thumbnail sketch of your background in your own words. I do know that you were born in a mud and grass hut in Kenya.
You're
in
giving
the
it
1950s.
All away. Stop.
No,
stop.
No. And now, several decades later, you're a highly successful speaker and consultant in Boise, Idaho. But could you give us kind of the connect the dots from A to Z of how you went from Kenya to Boise, Idaho?
Well, I took a plane.
All right, next question, Ryan.
Right. Moving on.
Let me just say this. First of all, again, thank you for this invitation. And I also want to take a single moment here just to really appreciate the Toastmasters people for just being so gracious. And Julie, the lady who wrote this article, who interviewed me and put it together, is the best I've ever had in my many, many years of being interviewed, both in America, in Africa. This just came out amazingly wonderful. So I like to do that. Now, when I open my mouth, people can tell that I have an accent, but my accent is from Wyoming. 1986, January, February, I was very fortunate to get a scholarship to come to United States, and I landed in Laramie, Wyoming to do my graduate studies there. I did my undergraduate in Kenya, Nairobi. I did my high school in Kenya too, but really where I grew up is Kangundo. Kangundo is a small community. I come from the third or fourth, depending on times, the third or fourth largest, I hate to call them tribes, but it's the largest community in Kenya, and they're called Kamba. I was born there. I'm the first born of 12 children. I grew up in a polygamous family whereby my father basically had several wives at the same time concurrently, which is very different from the West. You know, in the West, it's consecutively one after another.
Right.
So I grew up in that kind of a family, challenged with the limited resources. When I tell kids, actually, when I go to speak and I tell students that I had my first underwear at the age of 13, that is 10 plus 3, and the shoes, I remember my mother coming to a small hospital where I was admitted suffering from malaria. My mother looked at the hospital floors and the bathrooms, and for some reason, she just didn't feel comfortable with me there in that those floors so dirty. And she came to the small bed I was lying down, and she gave me the shoes she was wearing. And that was when I was 17 years old, wore my first pair of shoes given by my mother.
Wow.
I have to make my one point very clear. My father could have bought me those things. My father was basically, the beginning we were, there was nothing, but my father started a small business which could afford some things like that. However, my father had amazing philosophy. My father used to think, if you are wearing shoes or long pants, long trousers, what we call them trousers, or long-sleeved shirts, you could not concentrate in school. So my father actually never bought us those things. And you know, even in my elementary school, which we used to call primary school, actually, it was illegal to go to school with shoes.
Wow.
Oh, because, yeah, I mean, what I mean by legal, you're not taken to jail, but you were sent home, all the shoes were taken because not very many kids had shoes. So you are told those who have, if they come with them, they will make the others feel bad.
Ah. Right.
So there were signs in the school that said, shoes, no service.
Yeah. Oh, no, we never even we never even had signs of any school handbook and expectations. Those things were taught by a teacher, and they were planted in our minds and our hearts, because if they were not, if you messed up, you got beaten up. I mean, they used to call them spanking.
Right. That'll reinforce a lesson.
the lessons were reinforced. So right. that's really. But it was a great place too. In my family, we had basically simple things. My father believed in two things: school, hard work. I mean, we are talking about hard work, working in the gardens. Taking care of animals. I mean, we had maybe one or two cows and goats there, maybe three or four, but they needed to be taken care of. Washing clothes in a river, irrigating plants, those things. The other part was education. My father believed in education. He was a second grade dropout, and he believed that if we were to get out of our miseries or anything, it will be through education. So he did everything he could to make sure that we were educated. He used to spank, especially me, because I was a slow learner. I spent 3 years, I mean 6 years in the three grades. I spent 6 years in the three grades. I'm the firstborn. There were a lot of other things we could talk about. But he really rewarded us too. When we did very well, he would give us rewards for doing well. My mother brought the third aspect, which was really faith in God. My mother was the only Christian person in that home, because I grew up in a family of witch doctors. My two great aunts were witch doctors.
Wow.
So I am a child of multiple cultures.
Right. So
that's really my background there.
Great. So you obviously lived very close to the land in Kenya, and I understand when you moved to the United States, you ended up working as an ecologist in a career that I guess left you with a close connection to the land. So you'd come to the United States, you've realized a large portion of what's known as the American dream, and I guess at some point something changed for you. That I don't know if I should say that wasn't enough, but you gained a vision for something more you could do with your life. Could you tell us how that came about?
Well, you know, and thank you for bringing that up. In Africa, you did what your classes, your grades, they took you. And if you are in sciences, you went to sciences. Basically, in high school, I did very well in math, physics, chemistry, and biology. And so that really led to my being a scientist in range management, getting a master's degree, second degree, and third degree in environmental sciences. And then when I was employed in a company in Idaho, I saw a meeting be announced, and the meeting was about those masters, and I decided just to poke in there, and I was shocked to hear people speaking something common. There were two speakers. One spoke about dogs, his relationship with his dogs, and the other one talked about relationship with his children. I mean, and I'm thinking, I remember my life with my last dog in Africa, 1970s, and I had three daughters, and those two speeches just so connected. Now, remember, I have to make one point very clear. As a student in Wyoming, I had given scientific research, papers at national and international. In fact, I had won an award in 1990 giving a scientific paper competing with the students from all over the world. So I was, in science, I was also there. But when I came and heard those masters, people speaking and connecting so well, actually I went home. And at that time, I never even knew there was professional speaking, but just told my family that this will change my career after the first day. And within 3 months, I had received the first certificate. It used to be called CTM,
right.
Certified Toastmasters something. And so I got that one. Then I continued with the next one. And in the process, I found out there is professional speaking. And within a matter of 4 years and 7 months after I had graduated with a PhD in range management, I was making a full-time living using what I had learned in Toastmasters.
Wow.
Wow.
And of course, now, in April this year, it will be 15 years since I left corporate America. Hmm.
So you gave a speech, a humorous speech, about your grandmother and grandfather. I was really intrigued about that. You don't have to give the whole speech, but tell us the punchline about... I always love hearing about the humorous speech.
Yeah, thank you so much. The punchline was this. When my grandfather was happy, he used to call my grandmother a Western name, Elizabeth. Okay. But when he was upset, he would call her the native name. Yeah, and that is just really the punchline, and it was just fascinating. And even after this day, I still laugh and it's amazing because even I see my wife sometimes when she's calling our son.
Right.
When my wife calls our son three names, I know that guy's in trouble.
Uh-oh. Right.
Yeah.
I want to hear more about this transition to a full-time motivational speaker. You hear about these kind of transitions quite often. Well, you know, not that often, but somewhat in Toastmasters. But you don't often hear somebody giving up or going from a career as a doctor or a PhD to a full-time speaker. That's why I find this one a little bit unique. Can you tell us about this? Kind of what was going through your mind and what brought on this transition?
You know, and thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
There is a statement which was made by Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill said, "There comes a special moment in everyone's life, a moment for which that person was born. That special opportunity, when he seizes it, will fulfill his mission, a mission for which he is uniquely qualified. In that moment, he finds greatness. It is his finest hour." End of quote. When I joined Toastmasters and realized that when I was speaking, whether I was speaking about families, about moving forward with change, I could not believe the response I was getting. I mean, you are here in corporate America. They mm-hmm. are having what they call brown lunch, whereby people come with the lunch box and then they eat as they are listening to somebody speak. And then after that, you see them standing in corners talking about what you shared. I mean, I was just a good simple example. The company was going through change, and basically people were petrified. And during lunchtime, I just shared something about life in Africa with the African buffaloes. They would come to the village, and we never knew what time they would come. We never knew what was going to be affected, and we never knew which direction is going to come. But when there was a buffalo, basically life just was miserable. I remember going to hospital to see somebody heal. He had been stabbed by a buffalo. The first time I heard women screaming as a group was because there was a buffalo in the village. Hmm. And I talk about this buffalo and its social buffaloes, things which come to life without us approving. And basically change in the workplace is a social buffalo.
I got
and
it.
people will be affected. But there is in Africa, in Kenya in particular, there was one community which actually was used to do something very simple. And this was to get their spears when they saw a buffalo, and one person will spear the buffalo and it run. And as the buffalo is running towards that person, somebody else will spear it from another corner, and the buffalo will forget the source of the first pain and go to the source of the second pain. And then somebody else will spear it from another corner. The buffalo would forget the source of the second pain and go to the source of the third pain. And within a very short time, a fierce animal was brought down by people throwing just one spear at a time. And then I'll do the live applications, the application of the story. And the idea is, nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something.
Gotcha.
Number two, you have to communicate. You have to know the buffalo. You can never overcome a buffalo you have never identified.
Right.
Number three, you have to know who has what kind of spears. Even when you are self-employed or even when you are speaking, you always have to have people who you can call and you can work with to overcome the challenges you have identified. And communication, coordination, conflict management, ability to overcome change, change management. So I'll put the whole picture there, and the people will be surprised. And 1995, one lady who was a Toastmasters from HP, Hewlett Packard Company, heard me tell that story. She went and told her manager, about my story, and the manager hired me to do a four-hour speech. I had never given a speech more than 20 minutes.
Wow.
And so, after a full hour, I prepared. 1995, I gave that. Then 1996, I did extremely very well. That is the year also my book came out, East African Folktales, the stories my mother used to tell me when I was a baby. And then 1997, I left corporate America.
Wow. That is an interesting journey, no doubt. It sounds like you have a pretty good theme there with the metaphorical buffalo. Everybody has a buffalo, but for you, your buffalo was actually a buffalo, I guess.
It actually was in the village.
I was dealt with buffaloes. And if you, like, for instance, my book, Overcoming Buffaloes at Work and in Life, a book which now has gone to multiple countries, and basically outstanding, Overcoming Buffaloes at Work and in Life, basically, you can see the story there. I'm working with one of the best teams in the country. I wrote and faxed a story about the buffalo to the Boise State football coach, 1998. Boise State football coach. I never even knew his name, but I was showing him how the team could win. That team was now that time just basically not a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I also shared with him another story. And the guy called me to speak to this team. And I was shocked when I spoke to this team how they started treating every player as a major part of the team. And every player knowing that every spear they have can be used to overcome their opponents.
Mm.
And then we started bringing out some other aspects. You know, the team became so successful that actually, 1999, they gave me a full coach's uniform. And in 2003, they made me their homecoming grand marshal.
Wow.
And I still work with the team. Up to this day, I'm still the motivational speaker of the team. But it has been phenomenal to see a small college football team using analogies. And of course, you can't take away from the great coaching. You can't take away from the great players they have there. But it's amazing just little thinking how it can change everybody there. I meet with some students who don't even remember my name, who played there, but they always say, this is the Buffalo Man.
Right. Well, it's easier than pronouncing your last name.
Yeah, it's easier to remember my last name, Stu. Yeah, but so anyway, that is what I'm talking about, and a lot of other analogies. I'm working now on another book, which is coming out in spring, and it's called Run, Whether You Are a Lion or a Gazelle.
You like the animals, don't you?
Well, I love those animals. Yeah.
Well, Vincent, despite all this, you've had a very interesting career and an interesting path of life, but you still find time to run an organization. You founded Caring Hearts and Hands of Hope, Inc. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, thank you so much for bringing up this Caring Hearts and Hands of Hope. And you can look at it. The website is caringheartsandhandsofhope.org. caringheartsandhandsofhope.org. And let me thank you so much for asking this. In a while ago, I went back to Kenya where I was born, and I was taking a photo of my mother's store. And there was this man who was coming to hug me. He had only two teeth remaining. He was trying, he was smiling. Mm-hmm. His eyes were sunken, his hair was almost gone, and his clothes were just hanging on skeleton. And he was trying to hug me. He asked me, "Do you remember me?" And I looked at him, and I had no clue I had ever seen him in my life. And then he told me his name. And I realized that man, when he told me his name, was one of my best top three friends in seventh grade. Mm. And I could not recognize him. And I found out the difference between that man and I was because my dad could afford to pay for me to go to high school, and his father couldn't.
Mm.
The following day, I saw another kid in high school who had been sent away from high school because basically of $300. $300 a whole year, a kid has opportunity to go to high school in Kenya. And in that place, I looked at that boy and I realized that unless something was done, he will be like my friend in 20 years if he is still alive.
Right.
And then looked at my elementary school. Where I went to elementary school, 1970s and 1960s, there were only two friends I knew who were orphans. They came from places with no parents. The parents had died. In fact, of one of them, I knew both parents, and I knew when they died, 1968 and 1969. And this, but now the same elementary school, over 30%, over more than 30% of the kids there are orphans because of AIDS. And I looked at that and I realized, you know, if there is anything I can do, I will do it. And I'm very fortunate because I have a platform to speak for them, I mean, to speak and to share their story. And I came back here with a very bad, actually, I don't want to call it depression, but very heavy heart.
Mm.
I have lost three brothers and five sisters, all of them younger than I, from the same mother. All of them younger than I. 1974, my brother died. 1975, my sister drowned in a river. 1981, my brother died of liver cancer. 1995, my sister died going to school, actually, in Wyoming. And 1998, my brother died of asthma. But truly, I had never been affected than I was affected by the emptiness I saw in those kids. And I decided that I'm going to do something. And I started talking about them and raising the awareness and collecting money and sending them to high school. We have taken girls straight from a place where they could have been given away for marriages at the age of 15,
mm-hmm.
or living with their hands who were living in a questionable lifestyles, and taking them to boarding schools and doing extremely very well. We have more than 130 students we have already sponsored.
Oh, that's great.
That's fantastic.
That's great. And once again, that website, for people who didn't hear it, is caringheartsandhandsofhope.org. You could look that up there. Well, Vincent, this has been wonderful. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us? Something you told us about your new book you're working on. Anything else in the future for you?
Well, you know, oh yes, I am. We have now an office in America, in Boise, and we do have an office in Kenya. But what I'm going to just to share with the Toastmasters, I hope that if you are in Toastmasters, one of the greatest thing you can ever do is to make somebody else. Have somebody else, whether you are paying them, you are encouraging them, you are inviting them to come to Toastmasters, but if you can even sponsor one person, your Toastmasters investment will not be a waste. I have helped more than 300 people to become members, and I'm talking about financing them, and I have seen tremendous life changed. Toastmasters does pay.
That's wonderful.
That's fantastic. And Vincent, could you share for our listeners your personal website for your speaking and consulting?
Thank you so much for asking this. Actually, in fact, when you're asking me about something going on in my near future, I have a seminar I'm doing here in Boise. I do it here in Boise, and it's called How to Speak and Get Paid Greatly. How to Speak and Get Paid Greatly. And the thing is very basic. I teach people how to speak, but there's something else which I teach people. Outstanding. Marketing as a speaker. I have been basically... I don't want to belittle bureaus. They do a good job for those they work with. But I have created a business which has lasted 15 years, rewarding my family beyond and basically through my through marketing. So I teach people how to speak and how to market. The seminar is in at howtospeakandgetpaid.com. howtospeakandgetpaid.com. My website is Kituko, KITUKU.com, Kituko.com. Or you can go to overcomingbuffaloes.com.
All right.
Lots of ways to find you on the web.
Oh, my, yep. Anyway.
All right. Dr. Vincent Kituko, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it, and thanks for all you do.
Thank you so much. It has been wonderful, and keep up the good job.
Okay,
right.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much.
Bye-bye.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.